Parks. Welcome back for the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Men continue to get treatment, radiation, and surgery for prostate cancers that don't threaten their lives. The incidence of overtreatment has gone up, according to a study in the Journal of American Medical Association published last week. Dr. Ian Thompson, the director of the Cancer Research Center, Cancer Therapy and Research Center at the UT Health Science Center, joins us to talk about the efforts to monitor the disease and its treatments. So, Dr. Thompson, welcome to The Source.
It's nice to be back.
Welcome
Thanks for
back,
having
I should say. Yeah, we had you before when we were talking about low T and testosterone treatment. We welcome your phone calls. Give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980, if you want to ask questions, talk about the treatments for prostate cancer. And you can also email questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Go to the comments section on our website at tpr.org. And you can also join us on our Facebook page. So Dr. Thompson, the question is about prostate cancer, and we're finding it that it's not always a fatal condition, and so it doesn't have to be treated so aggressively.
Right.
Is that right?
So the challenge with prostate cancer is it's extremely common. As we age, lesions develop in the prostate that get called cancer of the prostate. And based on studies that have been done for years and years and years, we know that a man's risk of having cancer in his prostate is about his age minus 5 or 10 and put a percent. So I'm 59, so there's a 50 to 60% chance that I have a little bit of cancer in my prostate. And men live to, on average, 78 or 80 or so. So that means that three-quarters of us, more or less, will have some cancer in our prostate. On the other hand, 3% of men die from prostate cancer. So if you just put those numbers in relationship to each other, it means that most cancers of the prostate won't cause us a problem in our lifetime. Now, the tragedy is that 3% of men do die of prostate cancer, and that's 30,000 plus men per year in this country. And so by focusing on that and by doing more prostate biopsies, there's a risk, unfortunately, of finding these smaller tumors. And that's what sets up this challenge of perhaps the risk of overtreatment.
So would you say that there are like benign tumors in men's prostate that you just want to ignore?
Yeah, you know, it's Laura Esserman, who's a colleague of mine. She runs the breast cancer program at the University of California, San Francisco. She and I published a paper a few years back where we suggested that one thing we might want to do is rename these, because if these tumors commonly, there's a spectrum of prostate cancer from very slow-growing, which are the majority, to very fast-growing, which take men's lives. And unfortunately, that same word, cancer, capital C, the thing that if a physician talks with
you about it, sounds like a death sentence.
It sounds like a death sentence. And you think that a cancer is a cancer is a cancer. And in prostate cancer, that's simply not true. Many of them, not all of them, many of them are quite slow-growing and can be, if a man wants to, they can be monitored and only treated if there's evidence that they need to be treated.
So am I just showing my ignorance when I say that there may be a comparison to breast cancer, that women sometimes find lumps in their breast, but it's not necessarily a cancerous condition that needs to be treated aggressively?
Yes, it's a fascinating thing. Prostate cancer is probably the greatest example of this, where there is the potential for very, very significant overdiagnosis. But we know it happens in other tumors as well. It happens in breast cancer. So there are some breast cancers that won't cause problems over time. And the amazing thing about it is we know it probably happens in kidney cancer and melanoma and thyroid cancer and even, believe it or not, in lung cancer. And the reason we know in lung cancer is that some of these screening studies using CT scans they find more cancers, then there will be people with lung cancers and have problems from them. It's just that in prostate cancer, the reservoir for cancer is so much larger in the general community, and there's an even greater potential of overtreatment and overdiagnosis.
So we generally find prostate cancer by doing a PSA test, mm-hmm. and also by doing the physical exam in a doctor's office.
Right. And that's interestingly... It's one of the ways that you can reduce the risk of overdiagnosis and overtreatment, because it's a fascinating thing to me is that we have some dogmatic statements that we've made about guidelines about how to diagnose the disease, that if you have a bump on the prostate or if your PSA is elevated, which is on a piece of paper over 4.
That comes from a blood test?
Comes from a blood test, exactly. It's a protein that's found in the blood that's made by the prostate. If there's a bump on the prostate on exam or if the PSA is above 4, that you should do a biopsy. But we showed in a very, very large clinical study, we created an online risk tool called the Prostate Cancer Prevention Trial Risk Calculator. And your listeners and physicians routinely, you Google Prostate Cancer Risk Calculator, it's the top hit. There are some advertising hits that are at the top, but you go to the first hit below the advertising, and you can see that it's the PSA, the rectal exam, family history, age, and race ethnicity all are very important. So if you have a bump on the prostate, so a physical exam, bump on the prostate, and you're 55 and have no other risk factors, your risk of an aggressive cancer may be only about 1% or 2% at the most. And your risk of detection of one of those inconsequential cancers could be quite high. So you can actually begin the process of trying to not find those tumors that won't cause a problem. You can begin that process even before you do a biopsy. So there's several steps along the way that you can take to really, because the whole goal of early detection and treatment of prostate cancer is to prevent complications from the cancer and to prevent men from dying. And the way that you really do that, the evidence strongly suggests, is that you want to detect the aggressive cancers and treat the aggressive cancers. And the impact that you'd make from detecting and treating the less aggressive cancers is probably quite low.
So originally when I first heard about this line of thinking a while back, it was about treating people who were 80 years old, who they found them that they had prostate cancer, and you say, well, they're 80 years old. We're better off not treating it at all because it was their, you know, how much time have they got on the ticker, you know?
Yeah. Anytime, I'm one of the believers that anytime that something is a very simple explanation, oftentimes it's naive. And so an 80-year-old man, and some 80-year-old men are in extraordinary good health.
Like me. I hope to be one day.
Let's hope that when we're 80,
plan.
We're that
That's
way.
That's my plan.
Exactly. And some men are in extraordinary health. Say, for example, if you make it to, I know the data on 78. You make it to 78, the average life expectancy at the age of 78 is 10 years. If you're in good health, it's 15 years on average. And that means that half of the people live longer than that. If you have an aggressive prostate cancer at that age, there may be a 50 or 60% chance that you'll die of prostate cancer. And philosophically, my take, my granddad died of prostate cancer at 92. It's not a good thing. So philosophically, that it's okay to have a cancer and suffer the consequences of cancer at any age is just not acceptable. So, but again, you can look at it in several different ways.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we do want to hear if you've got questions and comments about rethinking treating prostate cancer in men. The number is 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. We will be right back. This is The Source on KSTX. We're talking about prostate cancer and how the use of advanced treatment technologies among men at low risk of dying from prostate cancer is increasing, even though the knowledge base is telling us that they probably don't need to be treating men as aggressively as they are. Dr. Ian Thompson, he's the director of the Cancer Therapy and Research Center at the UT Health Science Center, is joining us in the studio. And so what is it that we're finding out? That why is treatment, or we have noticed that treatment is continues to increase, even though we know more about benign prostate cancer?
And that's the paradox. And I emailed the authors of this paper last week to say what a remarkable contribution they made. It's a group of authors from the University of Michigan, and they looked at national data. And between 2004 and 2009, as our knowledge of the differences of prostate cancer began to increase and our ability to identify these slower-growing cancers became more precise, as one would have thought that the rate of treatment might have gone down, it actually increased. And that's the paradox of all of this. And it suggests that when we think about the treatments for prostate cancer, they have some side effects. So radiation and surgery are the most commonly applied ones. And they're extraordinarily safer than they used to be. The concept that I could do an operation for a man for prostate cancer, he'd go home that evening. If you told me that 30 years ago, I would have said impossible. The concept that a man would come in after being treated from radiation at the CTRC and then come to see me a few weeks afterwards and I'd say, how did you do? And the man said, well, you know, it almost felt like they never turned the machine on. But nonetheless, even though the side effects are going down, nonetheless, there are some side effects. Sexual function can be affected and urinary function can be affected. And the other aspect that's really important is it's expensive. And when we take resources and put them into healthcare for where there's less of a benefit, we are taking resources that we could be using somewhere else. And so one would have thought that as our information with regards to these low-risk prostate cancers increased and the safety of what we call active surveillance for these men, one would have thought that the rate of surgery and radiation would have diminished. But over that period of time, it increased.
All right, let's go to the phones. If you want to join the conversation, if you've got something to add, talk about your experience, give us a call, 614-8980. And Joe wants to join us. Joe, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Go ahead, sir.
One of the things that I think it may not be known about Dr. Thompson, and I certainly wish to sing his praises, is that not only is he a phenomenal researcher, but he takes time to explain those consequences that he was just describing. And it is the kind of thing that you could easily react to the word cancer and jump into treatment that the outcomes, you know, really have not helped you. But there are serious consequences to what was going on. And it was my experience that Dr. Thompson was the first medical doctor that actually took the time to explain that. My hope would be that other doctors would learn from that and be able to address those kinds of issues as well. Am I making sense?
Yeah, you certainly are. So you've had examples of doctors who just don't really explain what's happening or what your choices are?
I think that there are men in the medical profession who react the same way as a patient would, that at the word cancer, you immediately jump to the need for treatment without making the distinction that Dr. Thompson made earlier, that some of these readings are really not going to make that much difference later on. And that's a lesson I think that the medical profession needs to take more seriously.
All right, Joe, thank you so much for those comments. And you want to react to that,
well,
Dr. Ian Thompson?
That's a very kind thing for you to say. There are lots and lots of physicians who really spend an extraordinary amount of time counseling their patients. And so that's very kind of you to say. But perhaps the most important thing is to inform the patient about the risks. And ideally, if we do our job properly, and describe the broad range of options and the pluses and minuses of all the options, because people are so different, their tumors are different, their priorities are different, their social circumstances are different, that it's a fascinating thing to me that if you take that information that we know about the disease and you give it to different folks, they come to different conclusions about what they want to do. And to me, that's the ideal circumstances in which the patient is the captain of the ship. And the physician's primary responsibility is to give them the information to make the wisest decision for themselves.
So back to the original observation made in the study, advanced treatment is going up for men who are being found with prostate cancer, even though we now know that much of this cancer is benign and not life-threatening. Then who's making those decisions?
Well, I think it's a combination of patients and physicians together who are doing so. And one of the challenges, you know, there are many of us at the Health Science Center that specialize in very small niches. We have five urologic oncologists that all we do is urologic cancers. And so you can develop that expertise. But then I think about the primary care physician and the range of things that they have to know, that depth of expertise in, and some of the other physicians who manage an entire spectrum of diseases. Sometimes it's a little bit more difficult to have that degree of a sophisticated conversation. On the other hand, you don't want to come see me for a kidney stone. I don't do kidney stones. So I think one of the other take-home messages is that when you're diagnosed with a major condition, it behooves you to, number one, read as much as possible, understanding that on the internet there's a lot of stuff that may be more marketing than it is information. But the other thing is seek different opinions. And having multiple opinions and getting different perspectives from different specialties can be very, very helpful.
All right, back to the phones. Jim wants to join the conversation on The Source. Jim, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks. Dr. Thompson, I'm intrigued by the references you've made to different studies about morbidity and mortality. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? About which studies, who the investigators are, or how I can find those.
Yeah,
especially the morbidity and mortality by age.
Oh, sure.
All right, Jim, thank you for that question.
Thanks for the question. So there is the National Library of Medicine can be found if you Google PubMed. It will take you to the National Library of Medicine, and you can see all the abstracts. And now the wonderful thing about the public investment in medical research is that many of those papers are now in their entirety. You'd have to go to a library before. You can now click on PubMed Central, and many of those papers, if they had federal support, the entire paper is available for everyone to read. But in terms of prostate cancer, there are some really remarkable. This past study in JAMA from last week, John Wei, W-E-I, was one of the authors, and you can put that in. But there's there are two interesting ones. One is a very large randomized clinical trial of treatment with surgery versus no treatment at all that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine last year. The first author was Tim Wilt, that showed that for most prostate cancers, treatment did not have an impact on risk of death from prostate cancer, except in the aggressive cancers.
How do we know when you've got an aggressive cancer?
Good question. And the way that you do that is you can, in general, you can look at the pathology report. And so someone who's well-educated on this can simply take a spot check of a pathology report, and you can generally categorize pretty well into low risk or high risk. Now, there's some intermediates as well. But the way that you do that is when a biopsy is done, it's multiple individual little needle samples from the prostate. And in general, an aggressive cancer has a lot of cancer in it and has an aggressive cancer. So that a lot of cancer.
So this is doable. We can tell.
Absolutely. Now, it's not perfect. You know, only God is perfect, as my wife says. So we are imperfect, but we're pretty doggone good. So if you look at a person who has one of these small, slow-growing tumors, and we use a little score called a Gleason score to see how fast-growing it is, a slow-growing tumor that's small, and you say, what's the risk of dying from that cancer at 10, 12, 15 years? It's less than 5%. Less than 5%. And those studies, when I say less than 5%, many of those studies included larger, faster-growing cancers. So
do we need to do a better job of identifying aggressive cancer, life-threatening cancer, in order so that we can mitigate the numbers of people who are getting treatment unnecessarily?
So the bottom line is we're really good at identifying which are the slow-growing tumors. One of our research goals at the Health Science Center is to take the step, a blood test, urine test, tissue test, that tells 95% of those gentlemen, go home. You don't need to come back. For the aggressive cancers, it's multiple types of treatment together to prevent the cancer from causing death.
Okay, one more caller. Jim, welcome to The Source.
Oh, thank you. I was a patient of Dr. Thompson's in 2011, and I'm sorry, 2001, and I had radical prostatectomy. He did an excellent job, so I'm doing well. My question is, there was a paper that came out last year in American Journal of Surgical Pathology by Hillary Ross, and it's talking about Gleason 6 not even being really cancer since it doesn't have the capability of metastasizing. Wondered if there are any comments on that paper and whether it's accurate or not.
All right, Jim. So thank you for that call. So metastasize, that's when the cancer just kind of like goes all through the body, and
right.
that's when it becomes deadly.
Right. Well, it's an outstanding question. And again, in general, if to a blanket statement that Gleason 6, which is the slowest growing cancer that's currently graded, is inconsequential is probably not true. We know that of people who die from prostate cancer, 15% originally had a Gleason 6. So it's
okay. So the
imperfect.
Question is, people need to ask questions.
Ask questions.
And get to know your doctor and maybe get someone good like you. Dr. Ian Thompson, Director of the Cancer Therapy and Research Center at the UT Health Science Center. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening.